Running a small business can be messy, but it doesn't have to be. QuickBooks is a great way to track all of your expenses in one easy-to-use place. I've been using QuickBooks since 2019 when I launched my first business. My favorite part is the app because I can quickly and easily take a snapshot of my receipts if I'm on the go, and QuickBooks stores it in my account so that I don't lose track of them. Never lose sight of your business expenses again. From tracking everyday expenses to being ready for tax time, QuickBooks helps you understand where your money goes. Head on over to callenbrecken.com/QuickBooks to grab yourself a special promotion or just click the link in the show notes. Now, let's get into today's episode. Welcome to the Business Gay Podcast, where we talk about all things business, marketing, and entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Callen Brecken, and on today's episode, I have financial advisor and educator, Parisa Padjouf. Parisa is a seasoned queer financial advisor and educator dedicated to making financial literacy and planning accessible, inclusive, and personalized. With a focus on trust, transparency, and understanding each client's unique circumstances, Parisa offers a supportive, holistic approach to financial and investment planning. Parisa is a member of the Financial Advisors Association of Canada and actively volunteers by serving on committees and boards, including the Rainbow Entrepreneur Collective and the Estate Planning Summit. I'm excited to talk financial planning and education with Parisa, so let's jump in. Hey, Parisa, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. How are you doing today?
Doing fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to dive into kind of all things like financial planning. All of these things tend to, in the queer community, specifically queer plus community, we have different needs and different things. So I'm excited that we have you on today, and we're going to just jump right into it. On that kind of, same thread of thought, what are some unique financial challenges that queer folks face that often get overlooked in, the heteronormative or typical financial industry?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think when it comes to challenges, there are so many layers. I've been in the industry for the past 10 years, and 5 years ago, I started kind of like my practice, and I've been serving a lot of queer families, business owners, and individuals across the country. And what I've realized is that our system is traditionally built for that, default nuclear family with one retirement plan, and you have a house in the suburbs, And then this is not the story for most of us, it doesn't fit all of us. So a lot of us, we are navigating non-traditional family structures, for example, or there are gaps in legal protections, or for example, a lot of queer clients that I have conversations with, they have been faced discrimination, or for example, lack of family support when it comes to their finances, right? So naturally, these things impact how we earn money, how we spend money, and how we plan for it. I had clients, for example, that they may be more likely to support the chosen family or face they have to deal with higher healthcare costs due to gender affirming care, right? So because some of those costs is not always being covered, right? So I think it's really important to have an advisor, to have a person in the industry that represent us in this very male dominated and male populated industry, and who understands these unique challenges, right? Because this is part of my lived experiences as well.
All right. Yes, there's definitely, we could go on and on, I'm sure, about, I had this one conversation with somebody about how they had more of a polyamorous relationship. And so they were like, well, how do we plan for this kind of a relationship? And it was quite a long-term relationship. And they're like, well, how do we get housing? How does everybody get their kind of fair share, their equal share, and all these different kinds of things that, doesn't necessarily go into the quote unquote nuclear family. So there's lots of different challenges that the queer community does face. So what's maybe one myth about money or financial planning that you want to break down and bust right now?
That's an easy one. It's just always I hear from people that, okay, I'm gonna wait until I become wealthy and I become super rich, and then I'm gonna be ready to start planning or investing or work with a financial advisor. I think from my experience, that's the biggest myth that I've heard, because that's completely not true. To be honest with you, when I was younger in my early 20s, I had the same idea as well. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna work hard and I'm gonna make so much money, and then I will start planning and looking after my money. But then I realized that planning isn't about having all the answers or checking all the right boxes, right? It's about getting that support, getting that advice and education, and having access to resources while you're still figuring things out. Right, as you go. So I think, in my opinion, the earlier you build that relationship with someone you trust who understand your values, your objectives, your goals, the better your foundation is going to be.
Yeah, definitely. I think everybody always says starting earlier is better than starting a little
Later.
bit later, for sure. So, what does it actually look like to work with a financial advisor then? And like, how is your approach more holistic and inclusive than like the typical experience?
Yeah, for sure. I think working with a financial advisor, I think it should be beyond just a one-time transaction. And unfortunately, this is what most of us have access to. Most of us have access to branch level service, which is basically, okay, it's very fast. It's not really personalized. You don't really have that time to talk about your goals and objectives, your values. But it's honestly, it should be more than just a one-time thing. It should be an ongoing relationship. So for example, when I work with someone, the first phase is like, who you are, what are some of your goals, what are some of your objectives? Okay, let's analyze your current financial situation. Okay, Parisa, here you are now. As a person, as a business owner, you definitely have some goals, objectives for your financial life. Okay, let's put that all in the agenda to talk about it. What are some of your fears? What does your family dynamic look like? What is some of the biases that you have, right? And then asking about these things, when I do that with my clients, it helps me to really understand their mindset around money, how they make their decisions, if they have any like financial support in their family or not, right? And what type of life they're trying to build, what type of retirement they're planning to have. And it's really interesting, and I love this aspect of my profession a lot, because sometimes you talk to people who are in their late 20s or early 30s, and retirement obviously looks so far away. Oh, Prisa, come on, like that's another 30, 40 years from now. I don't need to talk about it right now or think about it. But I get it, but we can always close our eyes and envision like what type of retirement I want to have, right? So I think working with someone, going back to your question, with a financial advisor who does things more on a more holistic approach, it kind of like creates that space for you to have to build that personal connection. And obviously, based on that, we're going to create your financial plan, and then the next stage is to implement that plan. And the implementation stage is, of course, very important. But again, back to that branch service, it's usually when that relationship between the advisor and client stops. Okay, you sign your forms, you open your accounts, you're good to go. You're probably never going to get a call from us, right? I barely hear from my clients like who had that kind of like relationship with advisors that like, my advisor called me like every quarter to check on me to see how my life is going. It's usually the system is not built that way. But for me, once we implement that plan, the next stage is basically, okay, we have to keep monitoring your plan and review your financial plan as we go, right? Because we are looking at this long-term approach. So because you're a person, and as you grow, your financial needs grow as well. You probably, maybe you have a home, or now you have a baby, or you have a new job, right? So it's really important to keep monitoring and reviewing your plan and keep those conversations going between us. So that's basically how like my relationship with clients look like, and this is the typical experience they get.
Okay, so you kind of were touching about the differences between independent advisors versus like a branch advisor. Can you dive a little bit deeper into that? Because I know like once upon a time I had a branch advisor, but like they really didn't do much. I think all we did was like open a mutual fund, and then years later it ended up biting me in the butt anyways. And so because I went and lived abroad and such and such. And so it was just like none of this was explained to me, and I just felt like, well, what's the point of this person? And it wasn't very personable. So dive a little bit more into that difference between independent versus advisor.
Right. I mean, I get really passionate when I get asked this question, and honestly, I can go on and on. But there's a lot of differences. Just like as I explained, I think the type of relationship is very different, and I have so much respect for my colleagues, in different branches. But it's just like simply like because of lack of time. They don't have that time to spend. Like imagine like there's 30 people in the line, they don't have the time to sit with every individual and have a, 30-minute, 45-minute conversation, right? So I think the biggest difference is that relationship that you get to build with your independent financial advisor. They're kind of like your support team, right? Because when I work with my clients, we're talking about their taxes. We bring sometimes in different cases, we bring lawyers, we bring accountants in the team. So we are here as a team to support you. And so I think that's one of the biggest differences. And another difference is that independent financial advisors, their access to financial products or strategies in the market is not limited to one branch, right? Like, for example, if I was working at a bank, I probably only have access to what that bank has, right? So my shelf would be very limited, versus us independent advisors, we work with a really big channel of like products, a lot of product providers. So just like we have this privilege to offer more options to our clients for sure. And I think another thing is, like I mentioned before, is that ongoing support and ongoing relationship and that follow-up, right? Usually my clients with me, we do quarterly based reviews, right? And sometimes that review can be a 10-minute, hey Prisa, let's jump on a Zoom call. Okay, are we still on track? Everything's good. It could be 10-minute, like it could be something a little bit more deeper that we need to kind of like change the client's plan as we move forward.
Definitely. This kind of question popped into my head as you were talking about all of this is that obviously going with an independent financial advisor is going to have costs to it associated differently than if you were at your bank. Your bank kind of has that baked in. And I'm not going to ask about those costs specifically, but what I am going to say is that the thought I had was around embarrassment around debts and that in the queer community, quite often there's so many stories of people being kicked out or not having that financial support or, kind of that broken system, which then is the knock-on effect throughout our lives, and that there's that embarrassment around your finances, whether you're in debt or you can't hold money. And so how does somebody who maybe is in that position who wants to do this but doesn't have those capabilities or never doesn't necessarily have the funding to be like, oh, well, I need to spend X amount of dollars with this person? That just seems like money going out when I have this debt. Maybe can you speak a little bit about that?
It's true. There are, I mean, different independent financial advisors, as you might know, they have different structures of like how they get paid. We have right now in the market, we have fee-based planners, which is basically per session or per plan. We have commission-based advisors, and there are advisors out there that have like sliding scale, right? So I think that and I can only talk about myself and I think how I do things. It's basically, I started my practice to provide the services, this knowledge, to everyone, regardless of like how bad or how good their financial situation look like and how much money they have and where they're from and what's their status is, right? And I think the best way for them is to know that there are advisors in the financial industry that are willing to meet them at, whatever stage of life they are. So for example, I use the house analogy always, like the house analogy or financial house analogy. It's basically, okay, I understand you have some debt to deal with, or you need to take care of your budget or cash flow, or I work with a lot of small business owners that their pain, like the main pain for them is inconsistent cash flow, right? Some months it's better, some months it's lower. So how can I sustain that, right? And I don't know if it's all this makes sense at all, but what it's trying to say is like the best way is like, yes, there are different advisors that they're doing different things, but there are still advisors out there that are willing to kind of like work with you and with whatever budget that you have,
Yeah,
right?
that's important.
Like I had those situations before, that client was completely transparent with me that, hey, I want to hire you, as my advisor, and I want to work with you, but this is my situation right now. But I really want to do that. And you know what? Again, some of the based on their products or the strategy or the plan that we do for them, sometimes those partner companies actually compensate us directly. So I actually, there has been a lot of cases that I didn't need to charge my client upfront, right? So it was a win-win situation for both of us because at the end of the day, I get compensated for my time and my effort, and they get to have me as their advisor, and their plans are, being implemented. So, yeah, sorry, I don't have a straightforward answer
No, that's
because when it comes
perfect.
to planning, it's really like it's very like one by one, but I think, just in short is like reach out and talk to the person. I myself offer like a, complimentary session, and then we can figure things out together, right? Because at the end of the day, there are advisors out there that they are very committed to their mission, right? And if and like myself, and if the how if I get to have that conversation with client and understand the situation, and I understand that they need that help and support, but they might not be able to cover my costs or something like that, we can always get creative and find other like alternative options.
Okay, yeah, that's really important information because knowing that it doesn't necessarily need to come from the person, that it can come from outside. Like there's a product that you have that you're like, oh, I'm going to get compensated from this. So it's okay because something's going to be coming in. It's definitely really important because that helps the folks that maybe are a little bit embarrassed about their financial situation being like, well, I can't afford to work with that person. It's like, well, give me a call. Maybe there are ways that we can work together. So that's really good. Moving into kind of more the long-term thought process is like, why is it, why is the long-term planning important, like tax planning, estate planning, especially important for queer folks? And what are some of the things that we should be thinking about now?
I think I really like that you mentioned estate planning. And so estate planning basically means that, okay, I have a financial plan, I'm investing, I'm working really hard, I'm making all this money, right? So one day I'm going to get older, right? What's my plan basically to pass on this assets, this money, whatever I have under my name to my next generation, whether it's my chosen family or kids or beneficiaries or partners, in the most tax efficient way possible. Like, as you know, there are like Canada is one of the highest tax regimes in the world, and we pay a lot of taxes, right? But estate planning can look a little bit different for queer people, right? Because most queer folks like us, we don't benefit from that legal assumptions around marriage, inheritance, right? Or like having that beneficiary, right? So this means that simply, if we don't have a plan and if we don't start looking at that long-term planning, our intentions basically might not be honored. And I really hope that anybody who's listening to this, and I get really passionate about this topic because I always make sure that my clients have a will on file. It doesn't matter if you're in your 20s, in your 30s, in your 50s, does not matter how much money you have, if you have kids, please make sure that you write your will. I know it's a tough and emotional task to do, and I'm happy to navigate those conversations, help my clients. I'm not a lawyer. I can't write wills and power of attorney and those legal documents myself, but I will always make sure that it's part of your financial plan. And, I hear from a lot from queer clients that, okay, I don't know if I ever have kids or not, right? I totally hear you. Like, I'm on the same boat as you, but, you might have a favorite charity, or maybe you're so passionate about like different causes, right? So just having that written on a piece of document, and even if you can't hire a fancy lawyer, like that would cost like $2,000 to $3,000 to write your will, you can simply just like have a piece of paper and just write things down, sign it, and give it to your, somebody that you trust in your family or your best friend or your advisor. And just to make sure that your intentions, whatever you have, it will be honored if something happens to you or your family.
Yeah,
and
that's really important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I can think about like, when we talk about long-term planning, I talk with my clients about naming beneficiaries, creating that power of attorneys, making sure your chosen family or family is protected, right? And I think this is beyond just those legal steps. I think this is the care. This is about care and providing that care for your friends and family. So it helps us protect each other,
Yeah.
as we move forward and as we navigate this very traditional financial system together.
Yeah, the system was not set up for us, for sure. I know I've seen things here and there about how trusts are a way that a lot of like the very wealthy set up trusts to pass on their stuff and their finances and everything to their, kids or significant others or who, what have you, to kind of circumnavigate certain taxes and stuff like this. And, most everyday regular folks have no idea about this and don't do that. And it's just the regular what have you happens. And there's lots of different things and ways to, like you said earlier, navigate that in the most tax efficient way to help you and help support you and your family. What role can a financial advisor play in someone's life beyond just managing money? I know you kind of just talked about some, but let's kind of wrap the conversation up of like what else you could actually help support in.
For sure. I think, like I said, I make sure that I become part of your support team, right? And that's really important to have. It's not just about your money management or how much money you have in your TFSA, RSP, and your budget. It's about helping you feel confident, helping you make really confident decisions when it comes to money, and making sure that your personal finance is actually aligned with your personal values, right? So for example, a very very common thing that we talk with clients is like, hey, I have some money and I want to invest, but I don't want my money to support certain things, like weapon manufacturing or like oil and gas industries or things like that. Is there a fund or a portfolio, that can help me, that still grow my money so I have a foot in the market, but also is aligned with my personal values? My answer to you is yes, there is, right? Again, so that's something that is just beyond the money management, and that we come to that conclusion by having these conversations, right? Another thing, another role is like, and again, I'm talking about my experience, and sometimes my clients, they call before making a big life decisions, right? And how this decision is going to impact me. I have clients that received a big inheritance, like, their grandparents passed away and suddenly, they're sitting at like $400,000, $500,000. That's a lot of money. What do I plan with this? Like, how do I honestly, like, do anything with this money, or during moments of crisis as well. There are things that happen in families, could be a sickness and illness or death, right? How do I navigate those moments of crisis as well? And I think, what I like to end it with, I think money is definitely beyond just budgets and its riches and investments. It touches every part of our lives. And I think I see my role as helping my clients navigate it just with more clarity, confidence, and less shame.
Yeah, that's great. You were talking about like the types of investments you can do and like making sure that you're like, well, I want it to be in the areas I want it to be in. And I did have a guest on before, William Burkhart, talking about system level investing, and it's looking at like the holistic way of investing, not just like where should you put your money in all these different like ETFs and all that kind of stuff, but like everything down to like the workers in the places that are working and like how they're treated. And there are ways to look at that and define that. And of course, working with, a financial planner or somebody in that world is going to help you get access to that knowledge so that you don't have to do all of that yourself. This has been a really fantastic, great conversation. You're just a wealth of knowledge. Where can people find out more and folks connect with you, Parisa?
Thank you so much. Yeah, there are through my website, it's called Diverse Wills or parisafinancial.com. I think that's the best way they can get a hold of me. I have my Calendly linked. I always offer free and complimentary consultation sessions. And honestly, I always encourage people, even if they don't want to work with me, I appreciate just connecting with, like-minded individuals in our community and find ways, explore ways how we can support each other. Like, I'm interested to learn more about your practice as well. And also I'm on LinkedIn. You can just search me by my first and last name, Parisa Faiju.
Awesome. I'll make sure to have all those links in the show notes for everybody listening. Well, thank you so much for being a guest, Parisa. This has been wonderful.
Thank you so much again for having me. It's been great.
Thanks for tuning in today. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. And if you really enjoyed today's episode, I would love a star rating from you. The Business Gay Podcast is written, produced, and edited by me, Callan Brecken. That's it for today. Peace, love, rainbows.